This is Mike Corey from ESPN, and you're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective, a little bit different show this afternoon from the standpoint of, coming to you at 3:30 on a Wednesday, but looking forward to talking some college basketball. We have a first-time guest, and before we get to him and welcome him into the program, I'd like to welcome in Matt Semenza. Matt, how are things up in Connecticut this afternoon?
Bubba, I'm doing well. Thank you. It's always great to be here. It's a pleasure to have Mark Adams on the show today, and Mark and I were just sort of sharing stories about the beautiful Northeast and winter here a minute ago. But, I told Mark I don't want to bore him too much with my winter stories. So just kind of looking forward to catching up about hoops.
Yeah, Mark was talking about how much he really missed those Northeast winters. Seriously, we appreciate your time this afternoon, Mark. Really looking forward to talking some college basketball with you. You've had a very interesting career path. You spent, at least 17 years in coaching, if not more, by my count, looking at your bio. And then now you've been in broadcasting for several years as well. And let's dive right into it from an East Carolina perspective, because I know you've seen Joe Dooley's ball club at least two or three times, if not more. I think you had the Houston game, the Memphis game, and then maybe Temple. Talk about what you've seen out of Joe Dooley's ball club. Went through a rough 5 or 6 game stretch after Brandon Suggs went down, but got Suggs back prior to last night's game out at Tulsa, and the Pirates came up with a much needed victory.
Yeah, I was really happy for Joe and those guys to get that win against Tulsa. And of course, I don't root for anybody, but losing Brandon Suggs was just devastating to this team. I mean, remember, this team had knocked off Memphis. They were down by 20, came back, won on a last-second shot by Suggs. And then about, a minute and a half in the second half and in the next game, Suggs goes down. And this team was outscored by, we're talking about like 70 points over a 2.5 game stretch. And it was just brutal to watch. I mean, this is a much better, much improved basketball team. But, if you don't have the complete depth that, say, a Houston does at this point in their maturation process, one guy going down can really affect you. Vance Jackson, really a good player. I think that he's a guy, obviously, that can score. J.J. Miles, his story, of coming back from being a ward of the state when he was 4 years old, at 17, being arrested for a breaking and entering. And then, the influence that Joe Dooley has had on him to turn around his life, and now he's 3 credits shy of his degree. You can't help but root for JJ. Tristan Newton was putting up player of the year types of numbers. And then the wheels came off for a while because of that injury. And we talked about it a lot on the air. And it was brutal to watch that Houston game. Houston came out inspired and they smelled blood in the water early. And of course, when Kelvin Sampson, having coached against him and coached with him, I understand how that can go south really fast. So look, this is a team that's better than what its recent record has been. And I expect East Carolina now to regroup with Brandon back in the lineup and to really make some noise and to beat some people, because they're that good. They do have some interesting parts and pieces to this team. And I'm looking forward to them getting back on track.
Mark, when you look at this team offensively, we seem to go through some killer stretches where we'll be playing well, we'll be making shots, and then all of a sudden, we'll go through a 5, 6, sometimes 7 minute stretch without scoring a single field goal. I'm just curious, when you're a coach and your team is going through stretches like that, right, where you're having these periods 4, 5 minutes, what can you do to kind of pull your team out of that? Because it's kind of become commonplace here in the second half of the season, and I'm sure Joe Dooley's trying to figure it out. But what are some of the things you could do as a coach to kind of come out of that?
Matt, one of the things a lot of people don't talk about is the reason why teams struggle. It's not just East Carolina that goes through those 5 minute stretches. Believe me, this conference is as dirty, gritty, dingy, and I mean those in the most positive way defensively, as any conference in the country. I mean, Memphis, with their ability to intimidate you, they're a top five block shot team. You've got a team like Wichita State and Cincinnati, who both defend the three ball so well. Houston just dominating defensively. South Florida turns everything into a mud fight. I mean, it's just nasty. You know, you live in Connecticut, Matt, and I'm going to put it to you this way. Imagine you're driving through New Haven and you hit the dirtiest, dingiest, deepest pothole that you've ever seen in the state of Connecticut. And I know that doesn't happen in New Haven, by the way, right?
Never. No, never.
Yeah, never. And that's what playing against the defenses in the American is like. It's like hitting those potholes and then you're out of alignment for 5 minutes at a time, 10 minutes at a time, until you can get a good mechanic and try to figure it out. And sometimes you got to figure it out the next day in practice. But here's what I've learned, Matt, over the last really many, many years of my coaching career and watching really good re-engineering by specific coaches. Let's use Houston as an example. They were a ball screen offense with Marcus Sasser and Tremont Mark. When they went down, Kelvin Sampson completely changed their offense to be an inside out through Josh Carlton or Fabian White, an inside out type of motion with spacing offense. He changed it. Another example is Wichita State recently. Tyson Etienne, they were using him as a combo point guard off guard, and they were running a lot of ball screen offense. They realized that Tyson wasn't quite ready to handle that and carry the load for a winning team. And they went 0-4 to open up the conference and have gone through a lot of offensive droughts. So what did Isaac do? Again, he went to more of a spread offense and turned Tyson Etienne more into a coming off screens stand and shoot versus a guy coming off the dribble and shooting, which really isn't the Tyson strength. So for Joe Dooley, look, he's had to re-engineer this thing without suds and that type of thing. I think that what they were doing before was really good. They were dribble penetrating. They were spreading the floor. They're looking for good shots. And I think Joe does a really good job. But without Suggs, they weren't able to re-engineer. Why? You know, Alonzo Frank's a good player. But can you play through him consistently in this league and win? You can win some. He's a good player, okay? But when he's going up against maybe a Josh Carlton, you know, when he's going inside against all those bigs from Cincinnati, is he going to be a guy that they can isolate one-on-one and he can score? That's where they don't have a true go-to guy like Gardner they had a year ago. Look, I like Frank. I think he's a big, strong kid. He's done a lot of really good things. But Gardner gave them an inside presence and a focal point that they haven't been able to quite replicate today.
Yeah, no doubt. Definitely some limitations there, even though Zoe Frank brings a lot to the table. And that's something that here recently that Matt and I discussed ad nauseum when the Pirates were going through those lengthy droughts over the last five games and, you know, shooting 20% and 25%, how it was pretty much Zoe Frank or else in the front court. You know, to Lucci DeBoe's credit, last night he had perhaps, in my opinion, his best game of the season. He scored 8 points, 3 for 3 from the floor, knocked down a couple of free throws, grabbed a few boards. And then, you know, just talk about from a coaching standpoint, and you've kind of already referenced this a little, just the presence of Brandon Suggs. Brandon Suggs only had 6 points, but he had, I think it was 6 assists, 5 steals, and really stuffed the stat sheet the way he had been prior to his injury.
Well, and Newton hasn't been the same. Why? Because Brandon Suggs hasn't been out there. I mean, Brandon Suggs is a guy, he can distribute, he can guard for you. Like those steals he got last night, those lead to easy baskets. Who's the guard that's often out ahead of that steal? Tristan Newton, you know, or Jackson or Miles. I mean, they've got guys that can finish like that. And Brandon Suggs, he brings a certain swagger to the game. I just think that he's a guy that's so important to their offense and defense because he's a calming influence on this team. I mean, I look at SMU, and if they lost Kendrick Davis, now is Brandon Suggs as good as Kendrick Davis? No, I think Kendrick said Davis is a little better player, but Brandon Suggs brings that swagger. He brings that stat sheet stuffer mentality to East Carolina. And, you know, East Carolina falls off. If you don't have Suggs on the floor, then the next guy up isn't Jamal Shedd from Houston. Let's just put it that way. And so it's nice to have him back. I'm excited for Joe. He does a great job. I like him a lot, respect him. I really respect his staff a lot as well. And I think better days certainly are ahead now that Suggs is back for the Pirates.
Mark, just curious, as a coach and somebody, you know, obviously who calls these games, you know, looking at East Carolina from an outside perspective, what do you think the perception of just around the country is regarding this coaching job? It's obviously a very difficult place, you know, to win basketball games historically. Like you referenced, Joe has done a very good job here. He's had some tough hands dealt to him over the years. Yeah. What's the perception out there of this job?
Well, you know, I go back to what Kelvin Sampson told me about Joe. And again, Kelvin and I go back a really long way, back to the 80s when he was at Montana Tech. I was at Rocky Mountain College. And I asked him to talk to me, you know, about Joe, how he felt about him as a coach and that type of thing. And Kelvin, without hesitation, said, he's just an old ball coach. And you can't get a better compliment from Kelvin Sampson than being called just an old ball coach. You know, and I think Joe, from an X's and O's standpoint, is superior. I mean, I watch what they run. I watch what they do. Extremely well coached. The challenge at East Carolina in this league is matching the recruiting of Memphis and Cincinnati and Houston. You know, and I can go on and on and on at Wichita State, you know, because it's a different dynamic. I mean, this is a city-driven league, and then you've got East Carolina that's an outlier that way. It's a rural community. So there's different kids that want to play in that environment. I'll go back to my days at Washington State with Kelvin Sampson. I mean, look, Washington State's in Pullman, Washington, okay? It's up by the panhandle of Idaho. You're literally 8 miles from the Idaho campus. It's right across the line. Now, there's wheat fields everywhere, okay? So when we brought a kid in from Los Angeles or from the Bay Area or from Seattle or wherever, we literally flew him in at night, all right? We did. We flew him in at night because we didn't want him to see the rolling wheat fields that went on for like miles, forever, you know? Now, the campus was great, just like East Carolina campus is great. I'm not suggesting you bring guys into Greenville at night. I mean, it's a nice community. I'm just saying what we did at Pullman. And we were able to get certain kinds of kids to come in and play the Kelvin Sampson way in Pullman. And I think that's where the separation has been. But you can clearly see this is a more talented team that Joe has than what he's had in the last couple of years. And if not for this injury, we'd be having a different discussion about East Carolina right now. That's why I'm anxious to see how they finish versus how they've been over the last 5 or 6 games.
Yeah, no doubt. It's year 4 of Coach Dooley's 5-year deal. And, you know, it's going to be imperative to, you know, finish well down the stretch. But I think, you know, this ball, unless this thing totally goes off the rails, I think if you win, you know, 2-3 more games and you get to that 14-15 win mark, considering where this program's been, that it's still progress in the right direction, even though it's not what anybody wants, that you have to look at it with the proper perspective and give Joe and this staff time, because you're not going to go from, you know, 9th, 10th, 11th place in this league to the top 3 or 4 in this league without some road bumps.
Well, I believe in Joe Dooley. I think that patience is a virtue. I've been in jobs like East Carolina where you don't have some of the competitive advantages that other schools have. I was fired, you know, at Central Connecticut. There's 2 kinds of coaches, those who have been fired and those who are going to be, you know. And I thought I got my pink slip, you know, in 1996. In fact, I saw where Bruce Pearl got a lifetime contract recently. I got a lifetime pink slip. That was the difference between Pearl and myself. But when I say that, you know, my last 2 teams led the entire country in blocked shots for 2 consecutive years. In fact, we were the 2nd greatest shot blocking team at that time, other than 88-89, Mutombo and Mourning. I mean, we were as good a shot blocking team as anybody in the history of college basketball. And we had everybody back. And unfortunately, I got fired. We finished 500 in the league in a program that had just really become Division I just before I got there. So that was part of the rebuild as well. We were independent for 3 of my 5 years there, but we started getting pretty good near the end, but I wasn't allowed to finish my job. you know, because I had a new AD, new president. They wanted to go their own way. I get it. That's the way it goes. In Joe's case, you know, I see better talent coming into this program. And I see success stories like Jackson. I see success stories like J.J. Miles. I see Brandon Suggs getting better year to year. Tristan Newton getting better year to year. And so I think that, Joe is on solid ground there. And I think he's going to be even on more solid ground as we go down the stretch and into the next season as well. They're doing all the right things.
Yeah, Mark, you bring up Kelvin Sampson. Like you mentioned, you and Kelvin go back three-plus decades to your time out there at Rocky Mountain College when he was at Montana Tech. And then you said he was also obviously the head coach at Washington State, where he did a very good job, an extremely hard place to win, much like East Carolina is, yeah, for a variety of reasons. And he and I guess what Tony Bennett are about the only people that have sustained success there. But just talk about Coach Sampson, just seeing what he's doing at Houston. He's won everywhere he's been, and he's winning at such a high level with the Cougars. Went to the Final Four a season ago. How far do you think this year's club, and that's currently number two in the net, can take things?
Well, they're really good. I mean, when I played against them at Rocky Mountain College, I've told this story often that, look, Kelvin coaches with the biggest chip on his shoulder of any coach I've ever been around. And I learned that early in my coaching career. I was 25 years old. He was 26. He came into Montana Tech a year before I came into Rocky Mountain College. Collectively, those two teams had won 7 games total in the previous year before our arrival. In 3 years and then 4 years for Kelvin, he won back-to-back Frontier Conference championships. We end up winning the District 12 championship. We actually beat Montana Tech at Montana Tech to go to the national tournament, and Kelvin came with me to support my team. Later on, he brought me to Pullman to basically coach his defense, and that's what I did for two seasons from 89 to 91. But I tell you that because one of the things I did in facing Kelvin Sampson, look, I would make up stuff, whatever, right? I'd just get my team so ticked off. I'd turn them into rabid dogs before we went on the floor because I knew what we were going to face. There was one night in Billings, we had beaten them the night before. We played back-to-back games, actually, in this league because, you know, it's traveled so far in Montana. So we beat them the night before, and their players came onto the floor, and one of them yelled, "Fluke." I pulled my team off the floor. We went into the locker room. I chewed their ass. I mean, I got after them for the next 15 minutes and called them every name in the book and how this team had disrespected us and what are those guys doing coming to our house yelling "Fluke" and this and that. I mean, I turned our guys into absolute rabid dogs because I knew what Kelvin was going to do. I knew what his team's going to act like, you know, and they're going to compete their ass off. And so first of all, look, you can talk about blocking off and doing all those things. You can't replicate it in practice. All you can do is experience it in the game. And you better be ready to fight for every single rebound. I think, though, coaches are going about playing Houston right now the wrong way. If I were playing Houston, I mean, what's their weakness? It's depth. They've lost critical players. Now, is he developing depth? Yeah, done a good job of that. I would run them up and down the floor. I would sprint them up and down the floor until they're finally their tails and their tongues are dragging. With 10 minutes to go in the game, 8 minutes to go in the game, I think you've got to run them aggressively. I think you've got to push pace out of a make, push pace out of a miss. I think that you've got to really get into them and try to physically wear them down because he can't rest guys forever. He can't do it. The other thing, too, is I would dribble drive them. I would move the ball defensively and then at all costs dribble drive. And I would go to the offensive rebound glass as aggressively as they do. I'd go like rabid dogs the offensive glass. My best offense would be throw it up and go get it. I know they're a great rebounding team. It sounds crazy. But you know the old saying of press a pressing team? I think when you got a great offensive rebounding team or a good defensive rebounding team like Houston is, I still think you got to create some unscripted baskets. So the other thing I would do is I would press them some, not the entire game, but after made free throws, selectively coming out of timeouts, half court trap them, do some things to make them play basketball. Now, they're not a highly programmed team. They can play unscripted basketball, but I would mix and match by going more aggressive versus less aggressive against Houston. I think if you go in less aggressive and just try to hold on, I think you're in deep stuff against them.
Now, Mark, go ahead, Matt.
No, I was going to say that's a fantastic point. I really appreciate that from a coaching perspective. And, you know, they just have so much length. They make it so tough for you. You know, I think that you look at that length that they bring from multiple positions, and they just made it so difficult for East Carolina to even get a shot off at one point in that game.
Yeah.
So I agree. I mean, he does a great job. That team is always prepared to play, and just appreciated your perspective on that, Mark.
You know, there's an old scene in The Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood. It's one of my favorite movies, cowboy movies ever. And there's a scene where this posse is getting together to go find this William Money, this outlaw, which is played by Clint Eastwood. And they got all these guys that are deputized in the whole thing. And they got this one-armed guy, okay? And he's got a six-shooter, and he's filling it full of bullets. He's got another six-shooter. He's only got one arm, right? He's got a second six-shooter, filling it full of bullets. Takes out a shotgun, filling it full of shells. Picks out a rifle, it's filling it full of shells. And finally, the guy goes, Homer, what are you doing? We only going after one guy, and you only got one arm. And the guy says, yeah, but I don't want to die for lack of shooting. Now, that's the way I feel when you play Houston. You just don't want to die for lack of shooting. You know, you've got to be the aggressor, or you're going to die a slow and painful death.
Now, Mark, as we wind this down, you know, wrap things up, because I know you got to run, but a couple things I wanted to very quickly mention. I know within the last several years, you and one of your fellow broadcasters, you guys dressed like Lloyd and Harry and Dumb and Dumber. That was hilarious. So if you would briefly address that. I came across that preparing for this interview and, you know, kind of jogged my memory. I remember seeing it, but I'd forgotten about it. And then also, I know you had the opportunity to meet Sister Jean. What a story the Ramblers have been in recent years. So whether it's Loyola, Colorado State, or maybe a Davidson, someone like that, who are some possible Cinderellas?
Well, first of all, I answer that question first. I love Dayton, Murray State with Tevin Brown, KJ Williams, really, really dangerous with Matt McMahon. David Roddy at Colorado State with Nico Medved, they've done a tremendous job. Ali Froek-Manesh, one of the assistant coaches there, who hit the big shot to beat Kansas. Down goes Kansas! Down goes Kansas was the call. I love that call. And Ali Froek-Manesh is one of my friends and a kid that I really admire for taking that big shot. And then North Texas with Grant McCasland, I think, at a Conference USA, I think they're a team that could sneak up on some people as well. Regarding Sister Jean, she's a true blessing in my life. She's 102 years old. I love Sister Jean. I met her when Loyola came to the Missouri Valley Conference. I'm buying a hot dog as my pregame meal because I was running around trying to get there. And I see this little old lady, you know, and she caught my eye, and it was Sister Jean. And we fell in love. She's the best. And she's a mentor. She's a guiding light in my life. And I also made the prediction when Loyola made the NCAA tournament a few years ago that Loyola would go to the Final Four and Sister Jean would be the biggest rock star in the country. And I was right on both, by the way. And so we stay in touch on a regular basis. And then what was the first question you asked me? I ran out of memory there.
No problem. Just talking about when you dressed up. Lloyd and Harry from Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah. So I've done some crazy stuff. A couple of weeks ago, I dressed up as an astronaut as we talked about the Apollo 13 flight and the reengineering of Houston and equated it to the reengineering of the Apollo 13 flight. So I literally had a 6-foot rocket right by Saturn V rocket right behind me. With the command module, the service module, I dressed up in an astronaut jumpsuit. We did the whole game that way. It was the East Carolina game, as a matter of fact, that we did that in. And then the Dumb and Dumber suits, that came about with ESPN. We were doing a New Year's Eve game in Wichita. Now, Wichita is like my second home. I've got really good friends in Wichita. I lived there for all intents and purposes during their runs from 2006 all the way through the Valley. I did the 31-0 game to clinch the regular season undefeated. I did the George Mason Wichita State game, bracket buster game in 2006, when both went to the Sweet 16 and George Mason ultimately to the Final Four. I saw Fred Van Vliet, Ron Baker, Clea Anthony Early, Tekel Cotton. I saw that group run through the Valley and had so many historic wins during that time. And so when it came time to do this New Year's Eve game, the Roundhouse is nuts. I mean, they are crazy. And I'm a little bit nuts too. So on our conference call with my boss at ESPN, they said that, hey, we want you guys to wear tuxedos, you know, kind of be classy for New Year's Eve. So Rich and I didn't commit to being classy or anything like that. We just sort of shut because we knew what each other was thinking. I called Rich Hollenberg, my play-by-play partner, afterwards, and we both started laughing. We both had the same thought. So they didn't tell us what kind of classy tuxedo to get, as long as it's a tuxedo. So we decided to do Dumb and Dumber. So I dressed up as Lloyd Christmas. Rich went as Harry Dunn. And so real quickly, I'm in this locker room and I'm getting ready to go out. We both, because we didn't show the fans what we were wearing. You know, we stayed in our regular suits. Then with about 30 minutes to go, we went in the locker room to go change. So it's about 10 minutes before game time. And I went to take a selfie of Rich and I to go on the floor. I couldn't take the shot. My hand was shaking so bad because I thought, you have ruined your entire broadcast career right now. So Rich took the picture. And now we go through this tunnel into the roundhouse, which is one of the greatest venues in college basketball. And I just turned around to Rich before when I got an orange cane. I got orange shoes. I mean, I am decked out, baby. So I turned around to Rich. I go, let's just go out there and kick their ass. And I start waving my wand coming out of the tunnel. And we both went to half court. Thank God for the student section. All right. Because I don't know how people my age actually were going to react to this thing. There was this hushed silence that came over the arena. And I'm thinking, oh my God, we're dead. This is not working. Well, the student section erupted. They went crazy. And then the whole roundhouse went nuts. And they're yelling. I'm waving my cane in the air. And they're all going crazy. We went over the student section. We had pictures taken with them. I mean, it was one of the most fun games I've ever done. Then post-game, I interviewed Greg Marshall and Fred VanVleet. I've got a great picture of Fred. He didn't want to be close to me. He didn't want to be anywhere even near in the area code to me. But he was a good sport. He stayed with me. And I still have that picture today. In fact, right here on my desk, I'll grab it real quick. I mean, here's a commemorative book that I have sitting next to Ron Baker during that 31-0 season. And it's my commemorative book of doing that historic game where myself and Sean Farnham and Rich Hollenberg, we ended up calling that game together. And just, you know, just great, great memories of my time going to the roundhouse during that very special time of basketball history in Wichita.
Yeah, that's an awesome story. Yeah, so many great lines from that movie, but specifically when they were dressed up in those tuxedos when they showed up at that at the party.
Bubba, I opened up the show like this. I told Rich, I didn't tell him what I was going to say. I told Rich, ask me what it's like to be a Wichita State Shocker right now. And they're like, you know, 20-0 or whatever it was. So he asked me, I said, Rich, it's like being from Aspen, where the beer flows like wine and the women flock like the salmon of Capistrano. That's how I opened that game, all right? It's the only time in the history that a college basketball game has been opened in that way.
That's awesome. A lot of people probably don't remember this line, but when Lloyd and Harry were going in and they're like, gentlemen, this is a $500 plate dinner. He said, good night, or $5,000, whatever. But he handed him twice as much money as he needed. He said, there you go. He said, put us down. He said, there's a couple grand. He said, put us down for four in case we want seconds.
It was a classic night. I'll never forget it. And I appreciate the fans in Wichita for putting up with me all these years.
Really appreciate the time, Mark. And we look forward to having you back on, sometime, before or during March Madness to take a look at things as your schedule allows.
Well, my pleasure, Bubba. Thanks for having me on. Matt, thanks for having me on. And to all those Pirate fans out there, look, you got enough talent there to make a little run here and to improve your seed for the American Athletic Conference Tournament. You've made great strides from last year to this year. And previous to that, 2 years ago, it's like night and day. So keep the faith. Things are going to get better in Greenville for sure.
Mark, first of all, it's a pleasure meeting you. Don't hesitate to come back for some New Haven pizza, all right?
I've had New Haven pizza before, and it is really good. I understand that.
Anytime.
Excellent conversation there with ESPN college basketball analyst and a longtime coach. Spent those 2 years at Washington State back in the late 80s and early 90s with Kelvin Sampson.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I really enjoyed that conversation. You could see why Mark was such a good basketball coach because, you know, he brings some excitement. He's got a great personality. He's the type of, hell, I want to go play basketball right now after talking to him. So, really enjoyed that. I'd like to catch up with him a little more. And I know we're a little, limited on time today. I was hoping to get his thoughts on, the transfer portal and just some of the big things going on in college hoops. But, we can save that for another day.
Yeah, we really just scratched the surface in that half-hour conversation, focusing primarily on East Carolina and then Houston and Kelvin Sampson, as well as those tremendous stories that we had there at the end. But so many things we could talk about with Mark, and really look forward to when we have the opportunity to have him back on the show.
Yeah, definitely. You get the sense that Mark, like you said, you know, he was just scratching the surface. I'm sure he's got a million good stories, you know, that he could share. But yeah, I was really interested to get his perspective on the situation at East Carolina right now. In particular, you know, just kind of looking at the job that Joe Dooley has done. You know, when you're a coach, you tend to look at things a little differently than the average fan does, and you have a slightly different perspective on things. So, you know, I was very curious to get his thoughts on that. And, you know, my big takeaway was when Mark talked about Joe Dooley's X's and O's ability, his ability to draw plays, and, you know, that he felt like he was a superior coach in that aspect. So that's good to hear. You know, last night was a big win, and now we just hope that we can continue moving back in the right direction, Bubba.
Yeah, and that's something I know we'll talk more on Pirate Basketball Overtime. We'll have that for you later on this evening. And late tip off last night, elected to, you know, just kind of think about things and do the show today. But really, really saw that presence of Brandon Suggs, you know, scoring. And the thing is, Matt, as we were talking in our group text during the game, you know, you had 1 out of 15 from three in the first half. But you had excellent ball movement for the most part. You had those fast break opportunities that Mark referenced, where Brandon Suggs created steals. And, you know, just his presence, even though he only scored 6 points, is tremendous.
Yeah, he's I think you had mentioned, Bubba, use the term, he's a glue guy. And that's really a perfect way to sum up his game. You know, he doesn't do any one thing at an elite level. And I don't mean that as a knock at all. But what he does is he does a lot of different things really, really well. And, you know, last night you saw evidence of that. I mean, he's pulling down rebounds. He's creating steals. You know, he hit some buckets. There was no bigger play in that game than the charge he took in that final minute there. I mean, that's the type of play. A lot of guys, a lot of basketball players are not willing to step in there and take that charge. You can't take that lightly. So it takes courage, you know, to step when you have a freight train coming at you, to be able to stand in there and take that charge. That's a big play. So he's a glue guy. He does a lot of things on the floor really well. And I know, you know, obviously the team's happy to have him back. You know, you could feel a different energy last night.
And his presence, kind of going back to my comments a moment ago, you know, we had really struggled to score, period, during his absence. And then last night when we had, what, at least 30-plus points in the paint alone, and then in the second half, the outside shooting came to life, knocked down 9 out of 14 from three.
Finally, right? And you could just almost feel a sigh of relief from Dooley when those shots started falling, because – let's face it, we've been on a terrible stretch, a terrible run lately when it comes to shooting threes. And, you know, like you had mentioned earlier, you know, in that first half, we're 1 for 15, but we're getting good looks. We're getting open shots. It's not like we were forcing up bad shots. And I think, you know, from a coach's perspective, if you're getting good looks and it's a quality shot, you go ahead and take it. But they just weren't falling, right? And then all of a sudden, the second half comes around and we come out and now we're still getting those good looks, but the shots are falling. And, you know, ultimately that was one of the differences in the game. I think Vance got hot. You know, he had a number of threes there in the second half. And, you know, you just can't state how important that is.
Yeah, and that was the thing. Like, you know, a lot of folks probably just saw that we had, you know, 25, 27, whatever the point total was at halftime, and think, here we go again, because we were 1 out of 15 from three. But if you really had paid attention and, you know, kind of understood what you were seeing there as far as the ball movement and so forth, and 10 out of 13 from two, you could tell it wasn't the same old, that it's just a matter of knocking down some shots, because we were getting production in the paint that we had not gotten since that UCF game.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, I thought Tulsa did a good job of keeping Tristan Newton out of the paint for much of that game. So it was good to see some other guys step up. And you know, I think, you know, obviously Luigi DeBeau played well. He had some good minutes. Frank did some good things down there. It was nice to see Leston sort of make his way into the rotation there for even a few minutes. So obviously just a huge win. You know, when you look at it from the outside, you're saying, all right, you know, this is East Carolina beat Tulsa, you know, big deal. But when you've seen the struggles this team has gone through this month, you know, this is just a huge way to sort of get back on track and hopefully salvage a season.
Yeah, and a lot of folks, like you're saying, they see Tulsa, okay, no, yeah, after that loss last night, they're 7-15 and I think 1-10 or something like that in the American. But I think after last night's game, they had something like 10 games decided by 5 points or less. So not a bad basketball team. They've been very competitive, much like East Carolina had been outside of that five-game stretch. And when you take that into consideration, it wasn't like we beat a total dog last night because they had gone down to Houston. I think they gave Houston about a 10-point game. At Houston, at the Fertitta Center is what I was trying to think of.
Yeah, and playing at Tulsa has been, that's been like a house of horrors for East Carolina. So our record against them has not been good historically. So to be able to go down there and get that win, it's a great step in the right direction. And now what you want to do is you just want to build on it. You want to keep that positive momentum going and play really well down the stretch. You know, you want to finish this thing the right way. And for a while there, you got the sense that the program was sort of like heading off the tracks a little bit. It went through a horrible stretch. So now you have an opportunity to hopefully, you know, finish this thing strong. You have Suggs back, you know, I don't know if he's quite 100%, but he's, you know, he's on the right track. And now what you want to do is you just want to, you know, finish this thing, you know, and maintain the positive momentum.
And something we have not referenced yet, at least not extensively, and that is the play of Vance Jackson and also Tremont Robinson White. Those two gentlemen, they really, really played well last night. It was right there with that Temple game as far as TRW is concerned. TRW had 13 points, 6 assists, and 4 rebounds.
Yeah, and he, you know, he's an interesting player to watch. I mean, there are some times when I watch him play, and this is Tremont Robinson White, and he can do things off the charts athletically. I mean, he's quick. He's got a really good handle. And there are times where you're like, whoa, I mean, he can make some tremendous plays out there. And then, you know, which is symbolic of sort of our team in general, is he can sort of have those games where he goes, you know, ice cold as well. So when he plays well, like he did last night, you know, it makes a huge impact for this team. And he made a number of big plays. He had a big three there in the second half. He had some big assists, some steals. So, you know, that's another thing you want to see. And then Vance Jackson, I mean, what can you say? In the second half, his shot started falling, and he came out very aggressive. He was looking for his shot. And to his credit, there was a point there in the second half where he missed 4 in a row. And he said, you know what, I'm going to keep shooting as great shooters do. And, those shots started to fall. And, you know, let's be honest. I know Joe Dooley probably didn't draw it up that way on the last play of the game where Vance hit that three from the corner. But sometimes when you're a hot shooter and you have a hot hand, you feed the hot hand and good things can happen.
Yeah. Vance, You referenced missing 3 or 4 shots in a row. He didn't miss many shots on the night. He was 8 out of 14 from the floor, 6 out of 11 from the three. He finished with 22 points. And obviously the biggest was there in the waning seconds, knocking down that three out of the right corner to put the Pirates up.
What a tough shot, huh? I mean, that's a very difficult shot with a hand in your face. And then right before that, the possession before that, Tristan Newton hits kind of an extremely difficult fadeaway jumper from the baseline with a hand right in his face. I mean, that is an extremely difficult shot to make. Even if you're just playing on the playground, I mean, that is a low percentage shot. And he was able to get that one to drop. And then Vance comes back to hit the big three. So, you know, sometimes that's what it takes to win a ball game on the road. And to their credit, they were able to pull it off last night.
Yeah, I know Frank Haith really had to be pulling his hair out on those two fadeaways by Tristan Newton. Tremendous defense. It's just even better shot making by Tristan Newton. He had that one from the baseline, and then he had another one from the left elbow. You probably recall that one as well.
He sure did. He hit some big shots there. And yeah, you could tell Frank Haith was definitely ready to pull his hair out. And I know he was unhappy with a few calls down the stretch. But, you know, hey, it's I don't feel too bad for him today. And I'm glad we were able to hit those shots. And, you know, that's what it takes. It takes some incredible individual performances to win at this level. And we got them last night.
Matt, before we get out of here, I wanted to get your thoughts quickly. I know I referenced the possible Cinderellas. Obviously, and that's one of the top things that people tune into March Madness for, is just to see who's going to be that bracket-busting team, like a Loyola or like a VCU several years ago, back about a decade or so ago now. George Mason's running the Final Four. Obviously, those 2 years where Butler nearly won it all. You know, who are some of those teams this year? Like, what are some of the storylines around college basketball? There's so much parity. It's really, really wide open.
There really is. That's the great thing about college basketball. There's so much parity, and, you know, so many teams that could win it. You know, when I look around, I think Gonzaga is obviously going to be very tough to beat. But, you know, that goes without saying. I think there are teams out there, and I watch quite a bit of UConn. You know, I think UConn is the type of team that they could make some noise. And, you know, they had a big win last night. They did beat Auburn earlier in the season. And, you know, right now there's not much talk nationally about UConn, but they're a team where if you get them, you know, in any given situation, they're capable of knocking anybody off. So I think, you know, that's a team, you know, obviously very local for me that I watch quite a bit of, but I feel like they're capable of making a run. What about you, Bubba? Like, what do you see out there? Is there anybody that jumps out?
Davidson is somebody, local team here, about 20 minutes or so from me. Had the chance to watch them and really like what they bring to the table. They can really shoot the three, have excellent guard play. And that's obviously something, the tremendous guard play that goes a long way come tournament time. And then Loyola's right up there again. Have not had a chance to see the Ramblers play, but will be interested to see if they can make another run to the Sweet 16 or beyond, like when they made it to the Final Four.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Every year you're going to have those two or three teams that just come out of nowhere. You know, Mark had mentioned Murray State. I think that's another big call. I mean, that's a team.
They're like 19-2, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a team that has had success in the postseason. They have a very, just a proud tradition in that program. That's a team you wouldn't really want to play heading into March. So, there's going to be two teams that nobody expected, that nobody picked in their brackets, that are going to surprise in March.
No doubt. And we'll go ahead and put this show to bed, so to speak. But before we do, let's promote some of our upcoming content. I did reference, or I put this out on social media. We were going to have a show tonight with T-Cop, Terrence Copper, East Carolina wide receiver from the Steve Logan era, from 2000 to 2003. Also played his senior year for John Thompson. Then he played for the Chiefs, Saints, among others. I think he spent some time with the Cowboys in the NFL. But T-Cop needed to reschedule, so we'll have him on here in the very near future. Tomorrow night, we'll catch up with former East Carolina head coach Mike Steele. Coach Steele had the chance to take in a game at his alma mater, watching the Purdue Boilermakers last night. So we'll talk to him about that and how far, if he thinks his Boilers can cut down the nets come tournament time. Also, today I had the opportunity
Very early this morning to catch up with Mike Kennedy on our NCD1 baseball preview. So that is our 15th interview in that series where we're catching up with someone from all 17 D1 baseball programs around the state of North Carolina. The only ones we have not talked to thus far are NC State and Western Carolina. So we'll get Corey Smith from Pack Pride on since Coach Avent, or at least since the NC State Media Relations Department was going to be able or not be able to, fulfill that request to get Coach Avent on. But really look forward to talking to Corey and about what should be a tremendous NC State team in the top 10 or 15 this year. And we'll be resuming that series with the Pirates and then Bobby Miranda, the head coach at Western Carolina. But on today's show, we caught up with Mike Kennedy, who's the longest tenured coach in the state of North Carolina, tied with Elliott Avent for 26 years at his respective institution. And the Elon Phoenix, will attempt to improve on their 22-22 mark from a season ago, trying to get back to the NCAA for the first time in several years. And they have a lot of young talent there in Elon. And then also always appreciate our tremendous sponsors, PGX Gloves, Mark Minakazi, his company, customized gloves, customized batting gloves, receiver gloves. Go to pgxgloves.com and check out everything they offer. If you enter the promo code ECU, you can save 25% on all products. So it's not just wearables. It's not just batting gloves. It can be, those customized gloves. So get you a customized baseball glove for your son or daughter as they're getting ready for baseball or softball this spring. Also, Next Level Training Center, appreciate Trent Britt and Gay Nail. They do a tremendous job there, an excellent staff. Anybody that's in and around the Greenville area know that Next Level is the place to go when you're training for baseball and softball, also other sports. So go to nextleveltc.com or call 252-756-NEXT to inquire about what they have to offer. And then last but certainly not least, Tim Neal with Surveillance and Security Solutions. Reliable, timely, accurate. Give Tim Neal a call at 716-490-4503 for all your surveillance and security solutions needs. If you have any questions about some of the things that he offers, Tim would be glad to answer your questions. Again, 716-490-4503. For Matt Semenza, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum, and you have been listening and watching The Sports Objective as we talk college basketball. We appreciate everyone tuning in. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon.